Welcome along to Season 3, Episode 25 of LOI Weekly. I often say it's a special show coming up, but this is genuinely a special show. Why is it special, Dan?
Well, we're in Baku, John. Azerbaijan.
We're in Azerbaijan, one of the more obscure places I think any of us will ever visit. But this is LOI Weekly, a special Baku episode, which is on Podcast Republic, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, and at LOI Weekly on Twitter. It's Johnny Ward here with Daniel MacDonald. But over the course of the show, we hope to have an Azeri journalist, considering how successful your geezer from Riga was that time, Dan. To be fair, he called things pretty accurately.
Yeah, hoping to get a local contribution before the show is out. We're going to hear, we're going to have Sean Gannon and Daniel Kelly, who we spoke to a bit earlier on, the Rings End boys, and we're going to chat to a couple of the Dundalk local lads who've, I guess their working life has probably been changed by the trips that they've been able to go on in recent years with Dundalk too. So, that's all coming up. But here we are. We're in Baku. We've had a lovely charter flight yesterday. We are 5,000 kilometres from home, but actually the trip didn't really make it feel like. It'd be a bit of a stopover in Romania. Did you get off the plane standing the steps?
I did. I stood on Romanian soil because one of the countries I haven't been to.
Doesn't like count, though.
Concrete.
Now, you have to... Yeah, airport doesn't count. I mean, this is the thing. Like, this is one of the things. This is Azerbaijan off the list now.
It's not like an embassy. It is Romanian soil.
Yeah. I just think, You need to get out of the airport territory, like, you know. I mean,
had a chat with the Hoobinator at the airport as well.
You did. The log players seem to be looking forward to that. I came down towards the gate and I see you locked deep in discussion with Pat Hoob, and I said, "Friends?" He just turned around. He was like, "No." And then there was a stern chat, John. Have you done sort of kind of, is there some kind of Chatham House rules in this discussion, or can you actually? What happened?
Chatham House rules, yeah. We just had a chat about Galway Hurling and that, you know. It's a big Galway Hurling fan. We had a healthy debate, but the Dundalk players certainly seemed to enjoy it. And all the while then, Stephen O'Donnell arrives at the airport and he's off to... where is he off to?
Cyprus.
Off to Cyprus to watch their potential opponent. So it was a busy time, but the Dundalk players, I have to say, you get a great vibe off them, their confidence ahead of the task, which is a huge task. But also want to laud the management for how relaxed they've been with the journalists. And if you're thinking of Gaelic Games journalists, how absolutely crap like their access to players and management is, like, this has been a bit of an eye-opener in terms of Vinny and the guys being quite relaxed.
Yeah, well, I think we've got stick over the time. I think the media generally in Ireland probably gets a lot of stick. But I think, you know, it's a bit of a Dundalk love-in going on a lot of the time. And I can sort of understand where that is coming from, because, like, there's a lot of very positive coverage that this team has received. Now, it's won a lot of leagues, done well in Europe, so, I mean, that goes with it. But I guess part of it is that when it comes to access, they're very relaxed. They trust the players. They trust the players. Not just take the media stuff out, but that's not interesting to a lot of people. But the players aren't... Like, I've travelled around a lot with Ireland and even sort of teams at, say, a higher level, and there's these boundaries that are put around players. But generally, this Dundalk group, when they go away, they're allowed to, you know, Vinny lets them go off around the city. They're not going to misbehave. You know, they mingle with supporters. And when it comes to press stuff, you know, invited us into the hotel, invited us in for lunch, Just to be a part of it. There's obviously a natural distance which has to be there. But even some League of Ireland clubs in recent years, I don't think management have maybe given off the same vibe. And sometimes that can be because they don't have that same level of trust in players or whatever it might be to say what they might say, or what are they chatting about, or what could they be talking about over there. And with the Dundalk group, and this, I mean, it started with Stephen Kenny, who was a big thing on... You know, he wanted to get his message out in press conferences in the hotel and have a proper chat rather than one with translation in the stadium. And, like, Vinny's carried that on in terms of this trip here. You know, it's and what does it mean if they get beaten 3-0 tomorrow? It means nothing, I guess. But I think there's no sort of inbuilt sort of siege mentality here where they're fighting against the world. That's never actually really been a thing in this group that much. Maybe individual players will have their own way that they'll be motivated by certain things. But generally, I find with these trips, they're pretty chilled and pretty relaxed. And I think, you know, you would hope that sort of experience stands to them in every respect. Because one of the interesting things about last week, in both games, in both the Shamrock Rovers game and the Dundalk game, it has to be said, is that both teams fell behind early and didn't lose the head. I mean, Rovers went on to do very well and control parts of the game. Dundalk, if you turned off that game and after 30 minutes last week, you know, if someone watched it 30 minutes and left, they'd assume, geez, that team in the black is, they're coasting. They're going to do a job on them. And that you could end up in a scenario that Dundalk nearly won it, and nearly felt they should have won it. It sort of says something about the group. And I think it takes a certain maturity not to panic when you go behind, because you've seen Irish teams over the years, maybe in that scenario where the world sort of caves in on them. And they seem to sort of overcome that. So, no, listen, it actually was a good week for both of them last week. This is a bit more Dundalk-centric this week because we're here. But, you know, the Shamrock Rovers tie on Thursday. All of a sudden, Europe is sort of getting very interesting for them because they play Austria-Vienna. If they get through, and it's still a big if, in the next round. And, you know, the Austrian teams haven't been top-notch in recent years. In fact, last year, in the same competition, Dundalk played a team from Cyprus, Larnaca, and if they got through, they would have been playing an Austrian team. And I think that the impression of Rory Higgins at the time, who was doing the scouting, is that actually Larnaca were stronger than the team in the next round. And sure enough, Larnaca hammered the team in the next round. I think it might be Sturm Graz, I'm not sure. They hammered them. So suddenly, like, you know, from a Rovers perspective, when I had Europe then as a bit of a cash grab for them, but actually now, if they get through this one, I'd give them a chance in the next round. So you never know. It's maybe, I think, because the Dog have the fallback if they lose here, that they have the Europa League, so they'll be in it next week either way. But you never know. The Rovers now too, it must be said. It's sort of getting interesting for them. So, yeah, there's a few angles to this European run, this European adventure this year, that could make it a more positive story than maybe we might have thought when the first set of draws came out around a month ago. I think the one point must be said, and just I think it's important to make it, that both teams finished very strongly in the first leg last week. It is an advantage to be a summer team, playing teams that are in pre-season in their league. And that's something you have to consider in any debates around what structure and what season we go for in the future. It's certainly something that you can use to your advantage for a smaller league. It is a positive. Now, I know there's another debate. I'm not sure if we're necessarily going to have it all today. That we have a situation where we've games being called off, the Docks game being called off this week, leaving Sligo losing out again. I can understand it more this week because they're coming back and we've done the trip, and it's straightforward in the charter, it must be said. But still, you know, to play on Saturday after coming back on 9 o'clock Thursday morning, I can see the argument. But really, it's all the messing around with the fixtures earlier in the season that seems to make it worse. And John Gill did speak about maybe compensation for clubs. And I think if you have a situation where you have clubs at the top coining in a lot of money from Europe that's making them wealthier and putting them ahead of everyone else, I just think you need to be more inventive. I saw the suggestion was made that maybe they should always play at home around this time. Again, it's hard to organise because you can't account for a team getting 6 weeks in Europe. You can't have six home games on the trot, obviously. But I think you need to be more clever and creative, because this is the same stuff that comes up every year. And people will listen to this show from other clubs, like, oh, listen, this is great. The lads are off covering European trip. And what about our club? You know, we're not having a game for 6 to 8 weeks. Finances are tough. And I think you have to be conscious of that resentment as well. I think we this is a LOI weekly show. So, you know, you have to reflect that not everyone is loving this Dundalk Rovers European stuff. It's great for us and it's good to get attention in the league. But maybe there's a bigger picture there we have to be aware of as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm a bit surprised that you thought like Rovers would see Europe as a bit of a cash grab because of not obviously.
I think my point is that, like, I think Dundalk have a group stage target. I think for an Irish club to get through the Europa four rounds is, it's just not that, like I think Dundalk are in Europe because of the champions route and the parachute to aim for the group stages. I would have had the opinion that Rovers starting off that it's just bloody hard to get through. There's, I remember last year when Larnaca did it, the stats of how many Rangers did it last year too, like the stats of how many clubs have actually done that from the qualifying round, it's small.
So getting a lot of curious looks from Azerbaijani workers, by the way.
They are, they're just there. But I can't imagine we've had too many listeners from
the Caucasus in general.
Well, I remember we put up our stats at one stage and we've had a couple, but you sort of assume it's Irish abroad, but you wouldn't know. I think someone was saying in Riga they were chatting to, like, again, the whole story about the taxi driver, someone who clearly has been punting on Dundalk or other teams quite regularly and seemed to know his business.
You know? What have you made of Baku?
Yeah, it's a fascinating place, really. I mean, I've always wanted to tick this one off the list. It's a real mix of old world, new world to a degree. I mean, we're now in the team hotel. know, a Hilton hotel. It's sort of a lavish place with a big sort of space shuttle style lift that goes up like 20 floors in the middle of it. Apparently the rooms and everything are amazing here. We're staying then in more in the old town, a bit more of a modest place. But that's like, you know, you have the women in the sort of the burqa. There was a bit of a debate over whether you could even wear shorts amongst us earlier on, because 7 or 8 years ago, I think it would have been frowned upon here, even for men to wear shorts of any description in any situation. But that's
I've been to Iran and the Middle East, and it does feel a bit like, it does feel like a cross between that and sort of Eastern Europe. It does have that vibe to it.
Yeah, like I think there's obviously a lot of wealth here. There's a lot of oil money here. I mean, Qarabag itself is a very wealthy club.
Indeed, there were interesting bags in Oriel Park in the first
place. I think the story goes that like some gopher last week was dispatched to Dublin to get a load of brown they were spotted outside Oriel Park unloading Brown Thomas bags. I mean, I suppose football officials living it up on overseas trips, it might not be exclusively an Azeri preserve, mind you.
We will mention the results from the weekend as well. And this kind of went a little bit unnoticed, but Rovers have completely screwed up their title chance, would seem, what little it was. And it's kind of mad that you look at this Rovers team, how they're performing in Europe, and Dundalk will probably soon be 10 points ahead of them, which is a hell of an achievement for Dundalk. But Shamrock Rovers really needed to beat a struggling Cork City on Sunday and didn't. One all draw down there, conceded a sloppy goal to Darragh O'Connor. But the other results, UCD won Waterford 2, that was on Friday night.
I think just having Zach Elbazetti back, even that small difference. We spoke about could Waterford get dragged into it, and even with Cork. I mean, I you said that to me privately. I shouldn't be throwing under the bus. Like I thought.
Well, I was just a little because Harps are doing so well. I was just saying.
Beating Derry is a massive result, obviously, on Friday. But I just think that Cork Waterford, they have enough of a cushion that they only need a couple more big results to be fine. So they will be okay. But I guess with Waterford, with their financial situation, was maybe more of a concern. I think they're okay now. I think, Harps beating Derry is huge. Derry then bounced back by winning in, at home to Waterford. A stunning goal by David Parkhouse. Not sure if you've seen it. Incredible strike. But I think the Cork Waterford, I mean, now these teams, they need a cup to give some energy to their season, but I think they'll be okay in terms of the broader relegation picture. I think that confirms it.
Sligo and Bowes was 1-1 then on Saturday. That was a game that was televised on air, as well as the Harps Derry game. So you got two air games over the weekend, and just have to give a lot of credit to.
And tomorrow here, of course, Air Sport, the game here.
Yeah, and you'd have to. You forget these things, you're actually away at the game, but fair play to Air, because the amount of people, let alone Dundalk fans, who just will not be able to make this trip and will be able to watch it tomorrow, which is great. And we take it for granted now, like that. You know, when the Rovers game wasn't on last week, it was almost a surprise because we Air show so many games. But got to give a lot of credit to Finn Harps, like, who looked in so much trouble. And to beat Derry City, big long throw into the box, made it tough for them. And they look like they have a real, real fighting chance of staying up this season. And it was obviously an interesting round of games, but this show really is all about the two European games. And just reflecting on before we talk to the guys, just reflecting on Shamrock Rovers, that was another sign of Jack Byrne's class. And it got me wondering, is Jack Byrne going to be the first player in the League of Ireland who's worth seven figures in terms of his value? Because if you play against Bran and you play against Limassol and you're probably the best player on the pitch in those games, and you've the pedigree that he has, albeit with the caveat that Britain didn't really work out for him, how valuable is Jack Byrne at the moment?
Yeah, I think plucking figures out is dangerous, because figures would be maybe dictated by his age, by his contract, you know, by other what it might take to get him. So while he might be worth it, and certainly inferior players will go for that type of cash, whether they would ever get it is another discussion point, because naturally he has one more year left in his contract. Let's say he stays over to the end of the season, which I hope he does, and he starts next season. All of a sudden he's in the last year of his contract. Clubs aren't going to pay £1 million for a guy in the last year of his contract.
How good was he?
He's exceptional, but I mean, this quality shows. Even I know, I think some funny over here, the Dundalk fans, I saw even Gavin McLaughlin, Dundalk Sports, say what's the hype about with Jack, and thinking there's a bit of a media love-in again with Jack. But he does affect things. Even on Sunday, he mightn't have had his best game overall in the Cork Rovers match, but in the 94th minute, he played a perfect through ball for Aaron Green that Aaron Green should have stuck away. So you're talking about settling matches at key times. He did it last week. The other players didn't take the chance that he created.
As an Azerbaijani guy looking at us very curiously there.
He's
really perplexed.
We have to be conscious of I think my voice nearly going down here.
You're in a former Soviet republic.
Yeah. Well,
we had an incident earlier.
There's a couple of incidents. Yeah, I mean, you've been whistling the anthem and getting to, you've ingratiated yourself with some locals. I mean, this anthem whistling is a skill that you really, you undersell it. Like,
this is it.
You can defuse many situations.
What do you do when you meet a homeless man in Azerbaijan who wants either a beer, money, a cigarette, or a kebab?
What do you do?
Well, you whistle him the Azerbaijani national anthem.
What did he do?
I think he was quite happy about it, but he was very much more interested in getting enough money for a beer. But I think it could be time to do a little bit of meet and greet, maybe.
Yeah, meet and greet. Let's go and catch up. You see, this is the thing. Let's try and be clever and let's catch up. We did have this chat earlier, but it is on this theme of local customs and practices and habits. We'll talk to Sean Gannon and Daniel Kelly. Sean Gannon earlier on did find out that maybe there's a couple of do's and don'ts around here, and he found out a don't.
And you're welcome along to Baku. It's Dan and myself here with the Rings In duo. We're going to put the mic over to Dan now and just discuss your experience in Baku so far. We also have Sean Gannon here along with Daniel Kelly, and we're going to discuss how things have been so far. How are you getting on?
Very good. Obviously, beautiful city. It's the first time I've sort of been out, but I've only gone to Spain and Portugal, sort of the longest flight I've had. But I know it's very nice. It's sort of all the buildings and stuff, as you can see out here, it's very nice. But the weather is very hot as well, which I think when we're over in Spain doing the training camp, it'll stand to us. But I'm looking forward to the match tomorrow and see what happens.
So, did you think this time last year, I don't know, Azerbaijan would be somewhere on your radar?
And probably on my holly years, not like on a training camp or training to go to play a match in the Champions League, certainly not. But it's mad how quick it can change. So we obviously have to stay focused and see what happens tomorrow.
You were watching a bit of Love Island last night, I believe, though. You weren't too far from home. I think Sean Gannon here might have been actually arranging it.
Yeah, he had the old USB. We had it on the projector in one of the rooms, so it was straight up. I think it was on at 12 o'clock over here, so I had the betting up on it and everything. I was telling the lads who's coming forward towards second and fourth, so we had a bit of crack. But no, it's all good. It's very nice. Looking forward to the match tomorrow now.
Sean, you had a bit of a... So this is the thing. You've done loads of trips, right? And one of the things is you spend a lot of time in hotels. You don't necessarily get to see the place, but you went out stage to do a couple of photographs, and then...
Nearly have to get bailed out there, yeah.
So tell people what happened.
We were on the promenade there, and... these guys came along and said I was actually with RTE at the time, and I looked around and there's this little miniature police car flying down the promenade straight up to Jamie. I don't think Jamie's a quiet enough lad as it is, but I don't think his Azerbaijani's any good, so we're nearly getting put in a cell by the looks of it. They just said we'd no permit, and within 5 minutes there was literally about eight or nine police around, so.
Would have been a pretty good news story if two dog players got banged up and back in.
Listen, I don't know what was going on, but I thought they were just saying you can't take photographs, you'd no permit to be taking photographs or whatnot, so they were just usual, they were all on the phone ringing people and everything, so we just kind of tried to just move away as we could, so we got back to the hotel, and then so it was grand. So,
like, this is the thing. I know Daniel hasn't. This is your first year of European trip, but you're used to it now. And this, we were talking about it a small bit earlier on, that you're getting to see great places. You don't necessarily always get to experience them, but it is still something. It's obviously a great part of the job of being a League of Ireland footballer is Europe and the place you can see.
Yeah, well, definitely. It's like, since I've started playing football, I've been to probably so many countries that without football, you know, we would have never been able to visit, or even would have been, they're not like top holiday destinations or whatever, but they're like, when you actually come to these places and get to travel around and walk around, they're all obviously beautiful places. And especially here, you know, in Baku, it looks we obviously arrived late last night, so I didn't get a chance to get out, but you know, obviously today it's a beautiful day and it's a beautiful place and very modern, and it's just somewhere that probably wouldn't jump out at you if you were if you weren't over here playing a Champions League game. It's not probably somewhere you'd end up.
I heard, Daniel, that in Riga you were sort of wearing the ear off Dane Massey, asking questions about all the previous trips, because you're probably curious, wondering what it was like.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, he's sort of, as Sean Gannon, he's been around the block a lot longer than me, and he's gone through a lot of things. I was asked him what the atmosphere, and like, it's the same. Even the home game, it just felt so different when you're walking out. I know I was on the bench, but the atmosphere is so different than a league game. You know what I mean? You're coming out and the fans are absolutely hopping. Even before, when you're warming up, it's so different. And then when you come away, it's, I know there's a good few that travelled to Riga. There won't be as much over here now tomorrow, but it's just, it's great experience. And I don't think I see myself here. If a year and a half ago, I think I was still playing Leinster Senior League.
That's the mad, the amount of progress you made in no time at all.
That's what I think. The 12th of January, I scored my last goal for St. Patsy Y in a league game against Malahide. Then I think the week after that, I signed for Bray. But I was originally training with Bray, and I was waiting to get the deal done. But Dave said, like, Dave Mackey was actually the one who spotted me, and he said I could play my last game, so I went out and played. And funny enough, there was actually somebody from Bowes that day, but they said I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
And then later that year, well, July then that year, I signed for Bowes.
You were working in Sandyford at the time as well?
In insurance, yeah. I was originally in Construction House. Then we moved, so I thought it was going to be a bit of a disaster because Construction House is just on the canal there and it's only 15 minutes away from my house. But we moved then to Arrakis down in Sandyford, but I was grand. But they gave me a lot of leeway because obviously when you're playing League of Ireland, your schedule changes a lot and games get changed. And I think I played, from my time with Bray and Derry, I think I played Derry away four or five times because we got them in the cup as well with Bowes, and I played them twice with Bowes away. Twice Bray away and got them in the cup of Bowes away, so I think it was five times the whole year. But it's very good. They looked after me in there, and obviously I had to get certain holidays and stuff, and had to get a couple of holidays from the next year after that, which I actually wasn't even there for. Mm. But they gave them to me, and they looked after me enough, you know.
So you're the Rings End boy, right?
Yeah.
So did you know each other when you were younger?
Oh, yeah, no, I would. Sure.
Everyone knows Sean Gannon.
Absolutely, yeah. He's only not even 5 minutes down the road, literally just through the Rings End Park.
Right, so
Sean Cavanagh's from that neck.
Yeah, he'd be around.
Do you know what? Like, it's funny. I've seen Dan play so many times for CY, and like, it's unbelievable to have him here. Like, you know, playing.
Like, he's had the same wing.
He's had so. Yeah.
Could you see the League of Ireland potential in him then?
Yeah. You could know that he could always kick on. But you know, it's great the way things turn out. Obviously, from knowing each other, being two local lads, knowing each other, and I've watched him play a lot in Ringsend. You know, to have him here now is brilliant. Like, you know, and especially with the impact that he's had this season, he's had a huge impact for us, and he's played really well. So, you know, I think to have him here is brilliant. You know,
the pace he has is obviously just such an asset because when you come on in Riga as well, it sort of changed the game.
Yeah,
in fairness.
That's what I think. It was a good time to come on because I think they're not as fit as us, and sort of the way the game went and stuff, their legs were sort of gone, and the left full's legs were. We're nearly gone when I was coming on, so Vinny was just saying to me, and Higgs and Giller were just saying, listen, get at him, just do what you do, don't overcomplicate it, just get it, knock it by him, and that's it, and that's what I've done. And I probably should have scored as well until we left the keeper saved, but I thought I'd done well when I come on, and we got a bit of luck on the night, but I thought we deserved it over the two legs to go through. And
are you visualising playing tomorrow now in your head, like, or
yeah,
coming on, or start, or whatever?
You see, it's hard to say, like, it's whatever way we set up tomorrow, but I thought I'd done well to start tomorrow. If I don't start, I'm the type of player that when I come on in 70th minute or 60th, 80th, whatever minute, when their legs aren't as full flown as they were at the start of the game, it might benefit me more and benefit the team more because, as you say, I have that pace and I can sort of knock a boy someone and be direct. But we'll see what happens.
What's your carpool then going up to Dock? Oh,
this carpool. If you could put three men in the car, yourself, this AJ and Benson,
right?
He brings the IQ up a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He is, because as me and Gano are probably below average, but he certainly brings it up.
He's well clued in now. He must know everyone rings in now.
Yeah, he knows everyone's nicknames well and everything. Being around the corner, yeah. That's very good. Yeah, and Benson is a legend. Yeah, poor chap. Now his ribs or whatever is wrong with him. Now he hasn't got a look this year, but. We miss him over here now, but hopefully he'll be back soon enough.
How quick is this lad?
Yeah, he's really quick, yeah. Don't have him beat him. Stuart's inquiry into it.
Statistically,
and are you talking on the picture and the IQ test of Benson?
or in the car on the way up.
Talking about the IQ test.
Yeah, no, Benson's obviously an absolute genius, but he actually plays like he's really clever as well. He can manage the game very well. Like, if we are under the cosh, he can sort of take the sting out of it and relax, or he can sort of set the press and stuff, you know what I mean? Which is obviously a good benefit.
What's going to happen tomorrow?
It's going to be a tough game. Obviously, it's a lot of the onus is probably on them a bit more now. They're obviously at home, so, you know, if
we still was.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're probably unlucky to be only coming over here with one goal. I know they had chances, but to be coming over here level with them. We're definitely in with Shelby. Yeah, we're here to go through. That's it's not cliche. It's not. They're a good side, but we feel that we have a chance to go through. And you know, obviously, you pay them respect. Huge pedigree in Europe. They've played at high level for a long time. But if you want to be playing in the group stages, these are the type of games that you have to kind of manoeuvre to get through.
Tala's going to be great as well when you get there. Just the way the pitch is now and the European nights and that. And yeah. The memories you've had.
I think it will actually. Obviously, I wouldn't have played with Dundalk when they were in Tala playing in the Champions League or the Europa League, but I think it suits Dundalk better, obviously, with the bigger pitch and the grass pitch. Obviously, the Oriel is what it is, and it's tough to actually pass the ball properly sometimes when it is dry. But Tala is obviously a really good pitch, so we can hopefully see what happens obviously tomorrow and take it into next week.
Just we were talking to Vinny there, and I think one of the things he took pride from last week or as a group that. You started badly last week. The game started badly.
Yeah.
It just wasn't happening for you. That you actually managed to regroup and at half time and get the show back in the road, because it's the kind of game could have ran away from you a bit. You know what I mean? Like you were struggling early on, you know?
One thing that we spoke about was, like, I don't want to jinx us here, to touch wood now, but they don't actually... They're not the type of team that score a huge amount of set pieces, are they? Like, you know? So we were saying, against a team... that are so good, you know, to give a goal away from a set piece is criminal. And obviously four minutes in, you know, they scored from a set piece. It's kind of like, you know, where we spoke about it, but they obviously had probably two or three other chances. Gary made a great save in the first half. They probably had another one or two. It probably took us a half time until we actually got to grips with it and got, you know, you can do all the prep work on teams, but until you're actually on the pitch playing against them, you know, do you just get a grip of the game? But I think when we just went in and spoke at half time, we felt we could just be a bit more composed on the ball and not force it as much. So I thought we started the second half brilliantly and probably shocked them a little bit. You know, they probably thought our heads would go down or they'd run out easy winners. Like, but I think we're definitely a better team, I think, in the second half. And, you know, obviously we had some good chances, but on another day they go in. But it might be a different game over here. You know, it's very warm, very humid. It's probably gonna have to manage the game a little bit better, I think. But we're definitely more than a match for them. I think they're a good side. But one thing from the European games, one thing that we've never gone into a game thinking that we're going to lose or we're going to draw, or we never went into a game, no matter who we're playing, we never went in thinking like we're inferior to these, or you know, we don't deserve to be here. Like, you know, we definitely be going into the game tomorrow thinking that we're going to go through.
Yeah, so that was Sean and Daniel Kelly. I think Sean's scrape with the law, I think that's going to become a bit of a news story now. It was more of a comedy incident than an actual serious one, to be fair. He also, he was also broadcasting Love Island for the lads in the gaff last night as well. So he's been busy.
Yeah, sometimes things like that just do make you feel a little bit removed from the world of the footballer as you get older, because maybe Love Island wouldn't be for me. But it was a reminder that this is a slightly different place. Like, there is, you're in very different parts of the world where, you know, officious kind of acts from the cops or whatever is probably not that uncommon.
Yeah, you have to respect the customs. I think there was a story that the Ireland U21 team played here several years back, and I think one of the doctors got arrested for taking a photo of government buildings, because that is a big no-no. But anyway, I think also you have to be very careful of generalising as well too. I mean, there will be local customs that exist, but then that also leads to the portrayal as a place as this like mysterious place with mysterious people, which just isn't reflective of the reality at all. I mean, we spoke to some locals last night, and we're often the idiots coming over here looking for them to speak our language and then sort of caricature them on the basis of that, you know, and we sometimes, I think there's a sort of a Western idea to be sort of very blasé about that, and then think, oh God, you know, they're asking us questions about home, and it's sort of there's a danger of it almost being patronising in how you reflect it. And I certainly found that, like in Russia last year, like there was for the World Cup, there was like a massive curiosity, like, what do you think of us? But I mean, they're very normal people living normal lives, you know what I mean? And as I said earlier on in another context, I mean, there's plenty of reasons for people to look at Ireland and problems in Ireland and think that we're a very bloody dysfunctional place as well. But anyway, on that topic as such, we did try and get a local contributor. So I will thank sort of a couple of, there actually is a bit of an Irish contingent at UEFA.com, and they put me in touch with Oktay Atayev. He's the UEFA correspondent in Azerbaijan. So I was hoping to catch up with him. Things weren't necessarily going to work that way because with his schedule. So basically just got to pop him a couple of questions. He said he'd send us a little audio message back just to explain, firstly, his thoughts on the game, and secondly, how important the development of Karabakh has been for football in Azerbaijan. So here was his response.
First of all, I want to thank you for asking my opinion. I will try to answer deployed and as objectively as possible. Speaking about the Karabakh Football Club, we should note that it represents the city of Ardam, located in the Karabakh region of Azerbaijan, which unfortunately has been occupied for about 30 years by Armenia. The conflict between these two countries began closer to the collapse of the Soviet Union and continues to this day. Exactly one-fifth of our country, 20%, is under the control of the Armenian armed forces. Today, Karabakh is known in the world as a refuge club. The team is forced to take rivals in Baku. Now about football. As you know, Karabakh has been the champion of Azerbaijan for the last 6 years. All these 6 years, team reached the group stages of the European Cups. They played 5 times in the Europa League and 1 time in the Champions League, becoming the first Azerbaijani team to play in the main stage of this tournament. Head coach Gurban Gurbanov has been heading Karabakh for more than 10 years. The club has a solid friendly team, and most of the players have also played for this team for a long time. Someone 3 years, someone 5 years, and someone already 8, 9, 10 years. For example, vice-captain Maxim Medvedev and defensive midfielder Gara Garaev did not play at other clubs at all during their career. That's Karabakh is exactly the club that is called a single family. The story of Dundalk is also known. It's the most titled non-capital club in Ireland, founded more than 100 years ago. In recent years, Dundalk has also constantly played in European Cups, but the results of the team were weaker than those of Karabakh. Nevertheless, to knock out of the Champions League already in this qualifying round will be considered a failure for both Karabakh and Dundalk. So the fight in the Baku match, I'm sure, will be serious. However, such serious factors as the course of the first match and its outcome, the results of both teams in recent years, the traditionally successful performance of Karabakh at home, as well as relatively minor factors like the Baku heat, to which the hosts are more accustomed, and the fact that Dundalk had a long trip to Baku and have to get used to the time zone difference. In my opinion, all this makes Karabakh a clear favorite of the tomorrow game. I'd rate the chances of the champions of Azerbaijan as 75-25. In the first match, Karabakh was clearly superior to Dundalk and could have scored even more goals in the first half. However, in the second half, Agdam team began to play on hold of the score, and such a struggling and physically strong team like Dundalk does not forgive this. So, in general, I consider the outcome of the first game to be fair, but the main thing for Karabakh was to score in Dundalk in the first leg, and the Agdamians did it. Unlike Ireland, in Azerbaijan, the new season of championship hasn't yet started, and Karabakh is from those teams that don't smoothly join the new season. If you pay attention to the results of Karabakh in recent years, you can see that in the first qualifying rounds of the European Cups, they always perform inconspicuously and hardly score goals, but then gradually reveal. By the way, another advantage for Karabakh will be that the team will play at, I think, the full stand of the Dalga Arena Stadium. But at the same time, it should be noted that this stadium accommodates less than 7,000 people and isn't native to Karabakh. Usually in the qualifying rounds of the European competitions, European Cups, Karabakh plays at the Republican Stadium, named after the well-known in Britain referee Tofik Bahramov, where there are more than 30,000 seats. Just now this arena is not ready for football, as there were competitions within the European Youth Olympic Festival. Finally, I'd like to say once again welcome to Baku, to Dundalk Club, its fans, and to you, Irish journalists. I hope you will take positive emotions away from the land of fire, regardless of the outcome of tomorrow's match.
Yeah, it was very interesting how he referenced Nagorno-Karabakh, which obviously we're not really supposed to talk about here. I think the locals aren't particularly happy talking about it. But this is their club, and this is a region that you can imagine that it's a club that people are very passionate about because of their background. You referenced Agdam, obviously, the Chernobyl of the Caucasus, or whatever they call it, but also expressed a lot of confidence. I think he's 75%. 25% is probably fairly much on the money.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, his point about recent seasons as well, you do look at Karabakh's qualifying results in the first rounds, the opening rounds, and they wouldn't blow you away, you know, and yet, come, you know, autumn time, they're able to compete with, like, super clubs. So, I mean, that is the sense, and maybe the slight fear that the Dock might have is that, you know, they really need to take that lead over here. When they had them on the ropes last week, when they were vulnerable, should they have pummeled them? Maybe that could be the regret that they take. But and you mentioned the venue. He thinks the venue is going to be a bonus for them, a boost for them. And I can see that why that would be the case. But I suppose from the away side's perspective, they probably have to look at silencing that as well. But as I said, it's not just not looking for the Azeri view here. We also decided to have a chat with a couple of the local lads from Dundalk who are also over from local media. Adrian Taff and James Rogers are amongst the contingent over here. Just chat to them a bit about how the Dundalk ascension, I guess, has changed things for them.
We're now joined by Adrian Taff of LMFM. He is one of the few journalists on this trip. I think there are only about a half dozen. But Adrian, I have to thank you because I'm actually using your mic and your LMFM mic. What would we call it?
It's a windshield.
Which yeah. I lost earlier on somehow, and I was for a little bit of time suspicious of the Azeri locals, but I didn't think anyone would rob a windshield with LMFM on it necessarily. Anyway, we've been on a few trips together, but this one is a little bit special.
Well, they're all special, aren't they? Yeah, looking forward to the game tomorrow, you know. It's a beautiful city, first of all, isn't it? I think coming in last night, I was delighted we came in at night, actually, because I think it gave you a real sense of the wealth, given the lights that you see coming in. And I haven't got it to have a good look at it. I think where all the journalists here are sort of pasty, subterranean, below-ground dwellers compared to everybody else. We haven't been out in the sun.
Speak for yourself, Adrian. but just, I mean, this experience, and I think actually, I think people who listen to this obviously would be aware that, like, local media in many respects are the lifeblood of a lot of League of Ireland clubs. That could be with the Cork gang, with the Derry gang. You know, you meet them around the place. What has Dundalk's ascension basically into this territory done for you guys? Like, even for local radio, for LMFM, your commentary in Riga went sort of big. But even in terms of the working life, to have this onto the beat, it must have been a game changer really over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think it's elevated Dundalk nationally, of course. You know, everybody knows that, and internationally too, I suppose. Peak Six have come in largely on the back of 2016. We started covering every Dundalk match, home and away, you know, in Europe and at home domestically as well, you know. So certainly in that respect, like, from my perspective, I was doing occasional Dundalk matches, and Jerry Malone, of course, who we're all familiar with as well.
We were threatening to have Jerry Malone on the pod here. We're still working with our lawyers over the possibilities of that, but we'll get on to it eventually. He'll send us a message very soon after.
You'll definitely need your lawyers post-podcast anyway, that's for sure. But certainly from our perspective, it's elevated Dundalk in terms of how important they are to us and what we do, you know. These games have become very important to us, and we really try to maximise it and let people know that the option is there to listen to us, you know, outside of TV, which of course not everybody will have, Air Sport who are covering the game tomorrow, you know. So tomorrow can be a big day for us in terms of, you know, connecting with Dundalk as well, one of the big towns in our area as well. You know, Drogheda, you know, maybe not the happiest of days at the moment, but I think there's better days coming for them too, and we hope to, you know, really connect with them as well through the League of Ireland, you know.
We've got James Rogers here as well from the Argus, and you sort of covered Dundalk nationally. Like, James, it's sort of the same comment to you. I mean, this I think you would have covered Dundalk around a decade ago in the days of the First Division and so on. This is obviously a very different experience now.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, it's such a cliche, but there was a time where you're wondering, was there going to be a Dundalk FC? Like, and it's not that long ago. It's only about 7 years ago. I'm lucky enough, I've got to go on a lot of these trips, and you just see the most amazing places and take great memories from it, both on the pitch and off it.
The best one?
For me, FH. I know people talk about Batty, and that was obviously special, but, like, I just think, you know, again, you get special moments where, like, I was with Paul Brown that day having lunch, and he could barely eat it because he was just that sick about what it meant for him and financially. And then I think we all went back to a bar after the game, and Paul was nearly gliding around the place. And you see these great memories, and you know what it means to people, and you know it's brilliant. Like, even that, this wasn't an easy place for people to come. It was expensive to get here, and you see small band of supporters, and you know I'm sure there'll be plenty more looking to be here, and I'm sure there's plenty more going to be by Skyscanner tomorrow night looking to book as well. So, like, you know, it's given people based their year around this now, I think, you know, around Dundalk, where, you know, they're lucky enough to have European trips, and it's an amazing period to be in.
Yeah, I suppose it is the mad thing about this trip from Dundalk, John, is that, like, I think next week they could potentially be in four different cities, depending on the result of three different games. So, you know, for punters and for people, it's not necessarily the easiest thing to do to actually plan, you know, to travel in great numbers, because, I don't know, like, you're going to, as James mentioned, it's going to be a scramble sort of on Wednesday, Thursday night, either way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a nice problem to have. You know, as a Galway United fan, I would absolutely love the idea of following Galway United in Europe. It seems a world away at the minute. We've had obviously great news.
Galway United Academy news.
Yeah, great news that the Comers are committing. And I think the future is bright. But you know, I get such a buzz from following Irish teams in Europe. I've been to watch Dundalk several times. I've been to watch Cork. I've been to watch Derry City. I've been to watch St. Pat's. And you know, just imagining what it would be like if it was your own team, but it's a nice problem to have. It is a little bit disappointing that there are going to be so few fans there to cheer them on in Baku, because this is a huge, huge game, and I genuinely feel they have a chance of progressing if they get through this round. As we said, like, to meet Stephen O'Donnell in the airport yesterday, and the amount of air miles that he's put in, he's not doing anything for global warming at the moment because he's been all over Europe following teams, and he's made the right choice, I think, by going to basically the place that is sending out a positive message in terms of what they could get in the Champions League in terms of Cyprus. But they are great trips, Adrian, and it's kind of, you're just, it's great that, you know, you might get the chance to go on another one as well, because they will have one more game. And as it was just, we were saying earlier on, just the guys in the squad and the management, they're just great to deal with. And Dan says maybe we have a bit of a Dundalk love in at times, but it's justified because they're just great guys to deal with and they're very open.
They certainly are. Yeah, I think Vinny has been very open as well, and he's been very good with the media, I think, you know, compared to most other managers in the league. And he's been very generous with his own time and with his players as well, you know. Even today, they moved the time of the press conference for the local media, well, for the Irish media as well. You know, that's something that's really appreciated by us, and they invite us in for food afterwards or whatever. They've been very warm and open with the Irish media, you know. That's really appreciated, you know. It makes our lives a lot simpler, you know, a lot easier, yeah.
One thing we should say as well is that it is hot over here, but it's not bacon hot. James, you were in Cyprus last year, were you, for the game against Larnaca, and it was just talking to some of the Dundalk players, actually, you know, they described the heat that day in terms of being next to impossible to actually breathe in. But whilst it is hot over here, it's not going to be a problem for Dundalk. I wouldn't mind getting a few predictions from you, though. They're up against it, obviously, but if they come over here 1-0 down, or 2-0 down, you know, you'd have a different mindset.
Yeah, I think going back to Cyprus, I mean, myself and Adrian were talking about it earlier. We went out to the stadium for the press conference the day before, and there was a bit of a breeze blowing, whereas the day of the game, it was actually just a dead heat, and it was played in daytime. I think by tomorrow, at least the sun will have gone down. It'll still be very humid or whatever, but I think they'll be used to that. They've gone on training camps to Spain, you know, a few weeks ago just to kind of prepare for this. They'll get used to it tonight. I don't think it'll be as big a factor. Obviously, they've to manage it, but I think as long as, and Vinny referenced it today, I think if they can stay in the game as long as possible, I kind of expect Carabag to come out early on and go at them. And if they can withstand that initial, I suppose, blitz that I expect, I think the natives will get restless, as they say. I do think there's a goal in Dundalk. I hate to say it, but it wouldn't shock me if it was extra time.
Yeah, 1-1 is a possibility. I could see it being 2-2 or something like that. I do think Dundalk, I think McElhinney and Duffy haven't really performed to the ability they have yet in Europe, and I think they're just ready to fire. McElhinney was very good in the second half against Pats on Saturday. What do you reckon?
I'm not in the business of predictions, Johnny, but I don't think you can predict a Dundalk win. You know, you have to expect that Carabag and their quality will show through, but Dundalk definitely have a chance. The fact that they scored the other night and had such a positive second half last week as well, and as you said, I think Patrick McElhinney, I think there's been signs over the last couple of games, and certainly against Pats, that Patrick McElhinney that can float past players is starting to re-emerge a little bit. I was talking to Vinny earlier on today, and I made the point to him, and he didn't disagree with me, and I was afraid actually asking him. I suggested that that maybe Dundalk have been a lot of perspiration rather than inspiration this season, that the whole side have largely been 7.5 out of 10, with the exception of Sean Gannon, who's been 10 out of 10 every week. And that the likes of Michael Duffy and Patrick McElhinney and these boys haven't really produced the inspiration that maybe you'd expect, and that little bit of goal, you know, stardust, you know. And he didn't disagree, you know, and I suspect
I would agree with you. I don't think they've performed. Like, they've had so many changes in midfield, I suppose, as well. He doesn't make predictions, but I think that was a fairly positive prediction. Darren, we're going to wrap up with the lads. I don't know if we want to give our prediction now, or shall we wait for later in the show?
I think we'll save it, John. We'll save it.
For what little it's worth. But in fairness, at least there is an element of...
A few Dundalk lads worried, you know, with your record of recent predictions that, you know, when you predicted it was going to be a safe flight over, we were all doomed.
On that note... It was great to catch up with the lads, and we're just going to wrap up the results from last weekend in the First Division, give you the fixtures in the First Division and also the fixtures in the Premier Division this weekend. But the First Division results, Limerick 3, Cove 4 in a pretty insane game. Shannon side, Shelburne 5, Wexford 2, another 7-goal thriller. Bray 3, Athlone 0, Drogheda 0, Cabin Teely 0, Longford 4, Galway United 0. And the fixtures in the First Division this weekend: Galway United play Drogheda on Friday, Athlone play Longford, Wexford play Bray, Cabin Teely play Limerick, and on Saturday, Cove welcome leaders and, I suppose you could say, champions-elect Shelburne to Cove.
There's a bloke there who just looked over when we mentioned Cabin Teely. I reckon he's a secret follower from afar.
Possibly has actually had a bet on them, given how popular they, although probably not in Azerbaijan actually, but Premier Division fixtures: UCD against Derry City, big game for the students there, wrapped in the relegation struggles at the moment. Finn Harps play Bohemians, Cork City play St. Pat's. All of these games are on Friday, and that's pretty much it then for the fixtures at the weekend. Want to mention Trevor Clark, Dan, because he got his move to Rotherham. Left Shamrock Rovers fairly quickly, and Stephen Bradley's comments were kind of interesting, that like, he has the talent but other things need to fall into place. But one thing that didn't fall into place was his luck. He's been chronically unfortunate in terms of injuries, and he basically is announced as a signing for Rotherham, then kind of plays in a Mickey Mouse pre-season game and gets injured.
Yeah, I mean, we're waiting on the prognosis, so I don't want to sort of speculate until we actually hear that, but it's obviously a bit of a concern, to say the least. You know, I think there was a quote that he seemed to have an idea. He knew what the pain was like, but again, be careful to speculate. And it is a shame. I suppose it's been an interesting couple of weeks, because obviously we've had Sean McLaughlin leave the league as well. We should mention his transfer to Hull, which has gone through, and I guess Cork, I think he was going anyway, but I think Cork probably financially needed to do something like that, just to you know, maybe ease some of the pain of not going through in Europe and probably not qualifying for Europe this year unless they can somehow win the Cup. So, you know, they're the measures that have to be taken. But you have to always hope that we can regenerate. You know, obviously Clark going out. They have Sean Kavanagh there, but they've got potentially Neil Ferrugia obviously to come in. And spoke about a bit earlier. I mean, if Rovers can go further in Europe, it'd be great to see Ferrugia get a chance, because he obviously looks so capable of playing for the 21s in terms of adjusting to that type of test. So, and that's the challenge. I mean, Cork now, I mean, it's a chance for Conor McCarthy to grow in stature. They've obviously got a fair bit of restructuring to do with their squad there. A lot of players out of contract, etc. Probably take some heart from the fact they took a result against Rovers, but I don't think Cork really want to be a team that's... It's a surprise that he got a home draw against a team from Dublin. Like, that's... You know, the bar has to be a lot higher there, and it needs to be set much higher come next February, which is realistically where their plan is aiming now. But you just hope that, you know, obviously you lose players that were constantly... There's players coming through. Obviously, potentially Graham Burke maybe coming back if Preston play ball.
I don't have a major issue with the likes of him going to Hull as well. Like, Hull is a big club, and it's good that clubs still want our young players, so that a lot of kind of interest is in the league, and like, it's an incentive for players if they do want to go to a higher level. So I'm not going to kind of mourn Sean McLaughlin's loss as much. I guess it's more when players sign for like League Two clubs and stuff like that, you're like, really, we should be better than that.
Yeah, well, I don't think we have too many examples of high-profile players from here going to League Two clubs. Maybe Hooban when he went initially, maybe to Oxford. But aside from that, I think, you know, generally actually players have gone from here to good levels. Like, a lot of players have got championship moves, and in some cases just haven't been able to get to that standard. But the fact is that they're getting the chance to go there in the first place. And we've seen players... I take your point. I mean, players going for a six-figure sum to any club in England. I mean, Rotherham are only, I say, League One, but they're actually a very big club, big stadium. You know, and Richie Terrell was there, spoke to him about it. You know, that's a proper-sized club. So that's good. Of course, is always going to be very, very tempting for our players. And it's fine. I've no problem with the league being a selling league. It's always going to be a feeder league to bigger leagues. Like, most of the 55 leagues in Europe are that. Into certain degrees. What we've got wrong in Ireland is that we get no money for the players when they go, and that's something that needs to be addressed properly, big time. And that's how other leagues manage to function. It's not just about TV money and stuff. It's actually about transfer fees and someone like Sean McLaughlin. You know, he's come through the ranks in Cork. I know he was UCC, but he's been produced by football in Cork, and as a result, football in Cork should be rewarded when they go, not letting them go for like a bag of jerseys and $5,000.
Absolutely. We're going to wrap up basically with some sort of a prediction for the two games. You know, I think League of Ireland fans who want to see the teams progress would have been very happy with the two first legs, because particularly just the way things happened so badly at the start. And in fairness to Shamrock Rovers, showed amazing composure. Jack Byrne has either scored or assisted all of their six goals in Europe so far, and they will hope that that run continues. I don't know, Dan. I think I give Dundalk a definite chance. I think history tells us that. Apart from Larnaca, they've been really, really good in Europe. They've been consistent in these games. They've punched way above their weight. If they concede, and this is the big thing, if they concede, they're not going to drop their heads, because they know they still have to score anyway, and they're still well in the tie. I could see them still having a chance with 15, 20 minutes left. When it's going to get very interesting, I don't think some of their key players have really hit their heights yet. They have players like Daniel Kelly to come off the bench. There's huge confidence in the team. I think Carabeg are very, very good, but I think they are slightly vulnerable defensively. On Shamrock Rovers, I'm slightly worried people think maybe that they're more there than they are, because this is still a very good side that are in pre-season and they're going to improve. So I think Rovers will get through, but I'd be cautious, and I give Dundalk a decent chance. Here's hoping.
Yeah, I kind of find myself actually, I'm worried. I find myself broadly agreeing with you. I think both home teams this week are going to step it up big time, because it's bloody crisis territory for them. I mean, the pressure they're under, and Vinnie Park alluded to it here, and I'm sure Stephen Bradley will be, you know, very much aware of the opposite. I mean, when you think, you know, that, I mean, Apollon are out of Europe. I mean, they're done if they lose. I mean, Carabag will go in, if they were to somehow lose, they will go into this parachute route, and having lost the, you know, the Bate last year, they went to the Europa League group stages that way. I mean, that's, you know, that's whatever, like $5-6 million in your budget. So for those clubs, like for Dundalk and Rovers, it's a bonus if you get there. Obviously, there's more expectation probably around Dundalk in Europe, where for Apollon to go out would be a catastrophe. But I think Rovers, if they keep the ball in the heat, like, they can capitalise on that pressure. I think that's what both teams need to do this week, is use that pressure to their advantage. So they're probably
that's
gonna
the one thing
they're going to have to withstand the storm. I think the home teams are going to come out flying in both games, and it's the team that deals with that best you know, that will get through as such, if any of our teams are to get through this week. I think it's about not being overwhelmed. I think if Dundalk are still in the tie, I think if you offered them the chance now to still be in the tie with 20 minutes to go, they'll take it, because that's when the pressure becomes stifling on Carabag, actually. I feel the Carabag will step it up, so I think it's a massive ask. I think I'd be more confident about Rovers' chances of progression, but I would hope that both of them, and this is where things like preparation and conditioning and, you know, all the work that you almost do in January and February nearly, as much as in the last 4 or 5 weeks, that, you know, we've seen Irish teams over the years being physically bested by opponents, and you know the heat adds another variable to it. And I think there was moments even last week early on with Carabag were a bit stronger at times and just shoving players off the ball, but the Dogs sort of found their way a bit. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but very much aware that for both clubs you're probably looking at best performances of the season almost in both cases to get through.
Yeah, pretty much agree with that. Very best of luck to both Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk. It's been a lot of fun following them, particularly watching teams who are not afraid to play football and basically take it to superior and better funded opposition. Just like to finish up by thanking Dundalk again for being so helpful with the podcast today and being so free and giving with their time. Thanks to all the guys who we interviewed for talking to us. Yeah, that's it, Dan.
Can you give us a few bars of the anthem to go, John? Can you sign off on that?
I reserve that for homeless people. Chat to you next week. But there are